literature, such as the inspiring biography of Anwar Sadat, In Search of Identity, and seeing movies like Chariots of Fire or plays like Les Miserables that expose you to models of win/win. But remember, if we search deeply enough within ourselves beyond the scripting, beyond the learned attitudes and behaviors, the real validation of win/win, as well as every other correct principle, is in our own lives. Relationships. From the foundation of character, we build and maintain win/win relationships. The trust, the emotional bank account, is the essence of win/win. Without trust, the best we can do is compromise. Without trust, we lack the credibility for open, mutual learning and communication and real creativity. But if our emotional bank account is high, credibility is no longer an issue. Enough deposits have been made so that you know and I know that we deeply respect each other. We're focused on the issues, not on personalities or positions. Because we trust each other, we're open. We put our cards on the table. Even though we see things differently, I know that you're willing to listen with respect while I describe the young woman to you, and you know that I'll treat your description of the old woman with the same respect. We're both committed to try to understand each other's point of view deeply and to work together for the third alternative, the synergistic solution, that will be a better answer for both of us. A relationship where bank accounts are high and both parties are deeply committed to win/win is the ideal springboard for tremendous synergy. Habit 6. That relationship neither makes the issues any less real or important, nor eliminates the differences in perspective. But it does eliminate the negative energy normally focused on differences in personality and position and creates a positive, cooperative energy focused on thoroughly understanding the issues and resolving them in a mutually beneficial way. But what if that kind of relationship isn't there? What if you have to work out an agreement with someone who hasn't even heard of win/win and is deeply scripted in win/lose or some other philosophy? Dealing with win/lose is the real test of win/win. Rarely is win/win easily achieved in any circumstance. Deep issues and fundamental differences have to be dealt with. But it is much easier when both parties are aware of and committed to it and where there is a high emotional bank account in the relationship. When you're dealing with a person who is coming from a paradigm of win/lose, the relationship is still the key. The place to focus is on your circle of influence. You make deposits into the emotional bank account through genuine courtesy, respect, and appreciation for that person and for the other point of view. You stay longer in the communication process. You listen more, you listen in greater depth. You express yourself with greater courage. You aren't reactive. You go deeper inside yourself for strength of character to be proactive. You keep hammering it out until the other person begins to realize that you genuinely want the resolution to be a real win for both of you. That very process is a tremendous deposit in the emotional bank account. And the stronger you are, the more genuine your character, the higher your level of proactivity, the more committed you really are to win/win, the more powerful your influence will be with that other person. This is the real test of interpersonal leadership. It goes beyond transactional leadership into transformational leadership, transforming the individuals involved as well as the relationship. Because win/win is a principle people can validate in their own lives, you will be able to bring most people to a realization that they will win more of what they want by going for what you both want. But there will be a few who are so deeply embedded in the win/lose mentality that they just won't think win/win. So remember that no deal is always an option. Or you may occasionally choose to go for the low form of win/win compromise. It's important to realize that not all decisions need to be win/win, even when the emotional bank account is high. Again, the key is the relationship. If you and I work together, for example, and you were to come to me and say, "Stephen, I know you won't like this decision. I don't have time to explain it to you, let alone get you involved. There's a good possibility you'll think it's wrong. But will you support it?" If you had a positive emotional bank account with me, of course I'd support it. I'd hope you were right and I was wrong. I'd work to make your decision work. But if the emotional bank account weren't there, and if I were reactive, I wouldn't really support it. I might say I would to your face, but behind your back I wouldn't be very enthusiastic. I wouldn't make the investment necessary to make it succeed. It didn't work, I'd say. So what do you want me to do now? If I were overreactive, I might even torpedo your decision and do what I could to make sure others did too. Or I might become maliciously obedient and do exactly and only what you tell me to do, accepting no responsibility for results. During the 5 years I lived in Great Britain, I saw that country brought twice to its knees because the train conductors were maliciously obedient and following all the rules and procedures written on paper. An agreement means very little in letter without the character and relationship base to sustain it in spirit. So we need to approach win/win from a genuine desire to invest in the relationships that make it possible. Agreements. From relationships flow the agreements that give definition and direction to win/win. They are sometimes called performance agreements or partnership agreements, shifting the paradigm of productive interaction from vertical to horizontal, from hovering supervision to self-supervision, from positioning to being partners in success. Win/win agreements cover a wide scope of interdependent interaction. We discussed one important application when we talked about delegation in the Green and Clean Story in Habit 3. The same five elements we listed there provide the structure for win/win agreements between employers and employees, between independent people working together on projects, between groups of people cooperatively focused on a common objective, between companies and suppliers, between any people who need to interact to accomplish. They create an effective way to clarify and manage expectations between people involved in any interdependent endeavor. In the win/win agreement, the following five elements are made very explicit. Desired results, not methods, identify what is to be done and when. Guidelines specify the parameters, principles, policies, etc., within which results are to be accomplished. Resources identify the human, financial, technical, or organizational support available to help accomplish the results. Accountability sets up the standards of performance and the time of evaluation. Consequences specify good and bad, natural and logical, what does and will happen as a result of the evaluation. These five elements give win/win agreements a life of their own. A clear mutual understanding and agreement up front in these areas creates a standard against which people can measure their own success. Traditional authoritarian supervision is a win/lose paradigm. It's also the result of an overdrawn emotional bank account. If you don't have trust or a common vision of desired results, you tend to hover over, check up on, and direct. Trust isn't there, so you feel as though you have to control people. But if the trust account is high, what is your method? Get out of their way. As long as you have an upfront win/win agreement and they know exactly what is expected, your role is to be a source of help and to receive their accountability reports. It is much more ennobling to the human spirit to let people judge themselves than to judge them. And in a high trust culture, it's much more accurate. In many cases, people know in their hearts how things are going much better than the records show. Discernment is often far more accurate than either observation or measurement. Win/win management training. Several years ago, I was indirectly involved in a consulting project with a very large banking institution that had scores of branches. They wanted us to evaluate and improve their management training program, which was supported by an annual budget of $750,000. The program involved selecting college graduates and putting them through 12 two-week assignments in various departments over a six-month period of time so that they could get a general sense of the industry. They spent 2 weeks in commerce allowance, 2 weeks in industrial loans, 2 weeks in marketing, 2 weeks in operations, and so forth. At the end of the six-month period, they were assigned as assistant managers in the various branch banks. Our assignment was to evaluate the six-month formal training period. As we began, we discovered that the most difficult part of the assignment was to get a clear picture of the desired results. We asked the top executives the key hard question, what should these people be able to do when they finish the program? And the answers we got were vague and often contradictory. The training program dealt with methods, not results, so we suggested that they set up a pilot training program based on a different paradigm called learner-controlled instruction. This was a win/win agreement that involved identifying specific objectives and criteria that would demonstrate their accomplishment and identifying the guidelines, resources, accountability, and consequences that would result when the objectives were met. The consequences in this case were promotion to assistant manager, where they would receive the on-the-job part of their training, and a significant increase in salary. We had to really press to get the objectives hammered out. What is it you want them to understand about accounting? What about marketing? What about real estate loans? And we went down the list. They finally came up with over 100 objectives, which we simplified, reduced, and consolidated until we came down to 39 specific behavioral objectives with criteria attached to them. The trainees were highly motivated by both the opportunity and the increased salary to meet the criteria as soon as possible. There was a big win in it for them, and there was also a big win for the company because they would have assistant branch managers who met results-oriented criteria instead of just showing up for 12 different activity traps. So we explained. The difference between learner-controlled instruction and system-controlled instruction to the trainees. We basically said, here are the objectives and the criteria. Here are the resources, including learning from each other. So go to it. As soon as you meet the criteria, you'll be promoted to assistant managers. They were finished in 3.5 weeks. Shifting the training paradigm had released unbelievable motivation and creativity. As with many paradigm shifts, there was resistance. Almost all of the top executives simply wouldn't believe it. When they were shown the evidence that the criteria had been met, they basically said, "These trainees don't have the experience. They lack the seasoning necessary to give them the kind of judgment we want them to have as assistant branch managers." In talking with them later, we found that what many of them were really saying was, "We went through Goat Week, how come these guys don't have two?" But of course they couldn't put it that way. "They lack seasoning" was a much more acceptable expression. In addition, for obvious reasons, including the $750,000 budget for a 6-month program, the personnel department was upset. So we responded, "Fair enough. Let's develop some more objectives and attach criteria to them. But let's stay with the paradigm of learner-controlled instruction." We hammered out 8 more objectives with very tough criteria in order to give the executives the assurance that the people were adequately prepared to be assistant branch managers and continue the on-the-job part of the training program. After participating in some of the sessions where these criteria were developed, several of the executives remarked that if the trainees could meet these tough criteria, they would be better prepared than almost any who had gone through the 6-month program. We had prepared the trainees to expect resistance. We took the additional objectives and criteria back to them and said, "Just as we expected, management wants you to accomplish some additional objectives with even tougher criteria than before. They have assured us this time that if you meet these criteria, they will make you assistant managers." They went to work in unbelievable ways. They went to the executives in departments such as accounting and basically said, "Sir, I am a member of this new pilot program called Learner Controlled Instruction, and it is my understanding that you participated in developing the objectives and the criteria. I have 6 criteria to meet in this particular department. I was able to pass 3 of them off with skills I gained in college. I was able to get another one out of a book. I learned the 5th one from Tom, the fellow you trained last week. I only have 1 criterion left to meet, and I wonder if you or someone else in the department might be able to spend a few hours with me to show me how." So they spent half a day in a department instead of 2 weeks. These trainees cooperated with each other, brainstormed with each other, and they accomplished the additional objectives in 1.5 weeks. The 6-month program was reduced to 5 weeks, and the results were significantly increased. This kind of thinking can similarly affect every area of organizational life if people have the courage to explore their paradigms and to concentrate on win/win. I am always amazed at the results that happen, both to individuals and to organizations, when responsible, proactive, self-directing individuals are turned loose on a task. Win/win performance agreements. Creating win/win performance agreements requires vital paradigm shifts. The focus is on results, not methods. Most of us tend to supervise methods. We use the gopher delegation discussed in Habit 3, the methods management I used with Sandra when I asked her to take pictures of our son as he was water skiing. But win/win agreements focus on results, releasing tremendous individual human potential and creating greater synergy, building P in the process instead of focusing exclusively on P. With win/win accountability, people evaluate themselves. The traditional evaluation games people play are awkward and emotionally exhausting. In win/win, people evaluate themselves, using the criteria that they themselves help to create up front. And if you set it up correctly, people can do that. With a win/win delegation agreement, even a 7-year-old boy can tell for himself how well he's keeping the yard green and clean. My best experiences in teaching university classes have come when I have created a win/win shared understanding of the goal, up front. This is what we're trying to accomplish. Here are the basic requirements for an A, B, or E grade. My goal is to help every one of you get an A. Now you take what we've talked about and analyze it and come up with your own understanding of what you want to accomplish that is unique to you. Then let's get together and agree on the grade you want and what you plan to do to get it. Management philosopher and consultant Peter Drucker recommends the use of a manager's letter to capture the essence of performance agreements between managers and their employees. Following a deep and thorough discussion of expectations, guidelines and resources to make sure they are in harmony with organizational goals, the employee writes a letter to the manager that summarizes the discussion and indicates when the next performance plan or review discussion will take place. Developing such a win-slash-win performance agreement is the central activity of management. With an agreement in place, employees can manage themselves within the framework of that agreement. The manager then can serve like a pace car in a race. He can get things going and then get out of the way. His job from then on is to remove the oil spills. When a boss becomes the first assistant to each of his subordinates, he can greatly increase his span of control. Entire levels of administration and overhead can be eliminated. Instead of supervising 6 or 8, such a manager can supervise 20, 30, 50, or more. In win-slash-win performance agreements, consequences become the natural or logical result of performance rather than a reward or punishment arbitrarily handed out by the person in charge. There are basically 4 kinds of consequences, rewards and penalties, that management or parents can control: financial, psychic, opportunity, and responsibility. Financial consequences include such things as income, stock options, allowances, or penalties. Psychic or psychological consequences include recognition, approval, respect, credibility, or the loss of them. Unless people are in a survival mode, psychic compensation is often more motivating than financial compensation. Opportunity includes training, development, perks, and other benefits. Responsibility has to do with scope and authority, either of which can be enlarged or diminished. Win-slash-win agreements specify consequences in one or more of those areas, and the people involved know it up front. So you don't play games. Everything is clear from the beginning. In addition to these logical, personal consequences, it is also important to clearly identify what the natural organizational consequences are. For example, what will happen if I'm late to work, if I refuse to cooperate with others, if I don't develop good win-slash-win performance agreements with my subordinates, if I don't hold them accountable for desired results, or if I don't promote their professional growth and career development? When my daughter turned 16, we set up a win-slash-win agreement regarding use of the family car. We agreed that she would obey the laws of the land and that she would keep the car clean and properly maintained. We agreed that she would use the car only for responsible purposes and would serve as a cab driver for her mother and me within reason. And we also agreed that she would do all her other jobs cheerfully without being reminded. These were our wins. We also agreed that I would provide some resources: the car, gas, and insurance. And we agreed that she would meet weekly with me, usually on Sunday afternoon, to evaluate how she was doing based on our agreement. The consequences were clear. As long as she kept her part of the agreement, she could use the car. If she didn't keep it, she would lose the privilege until she decided to. This win-slash-win agreement set up clear expectations from the beginning on both our parts. It was a win for her; she got to use the car, and it was certainly a win for Sandra and me. Now she could handle her own transportation needs and even some of ours. We didn't have to worry about maintaining the car or keeping it clean. And we had a built-in accountability, which meant I didn't have to hover over her or manage her methods. Her integrity, her conscience, her power of discernment, and our high emotional bank account managed her infinitely better. We didn't have to get emotionally strung out, trying to supervise her every move and coming up with punishments or rewards on the spot if she didn't do things the way we thought she should. We had a win-slash-win agreement, and it liberated us all. Win-slash-win agreements are tremendously liberating. But as the product of isolated techniques, they won't hold up. Even if you set them up in the beginning, there is no way to maintain them without personal integrity and a relationship of trust. A true win-slash-win agreement is the product of the paradigm, the character, and the relationships out of which it grows. In that context, it defines and directs the interdependent interaction for which it was created. Systems. Win-slash-win can only survive in an organization when the systems support it. If you talk win-slash-win but reward win-slash-lose, you've got a losing program on your hands. You basically get what you reward. If you want to achieve the goals and reflect the values in your mission statement, then you need to align the reward system with these goals and values. If it isn't aligned systemically, you won't be walking your talk. You'll be in the situation of the manager I mentioned earlier, who talked cooperation, but practiced competition by creating a Race to Bermuda contest. I worked for several years with a very large real estate organization in the Middle West. My first experience with this organization was at a large sales rally where over 800 sales associates gathered for the annual reward program. It was a psych-up cheerleading session, complete with high school bands and a great deal of frenzied screaming. Out of the 800 people there, around 40 received awards for top performance, such as most sales, greatest volume, highest earned commissions, and most listings. There was a lot of hoopla, excitement, cheering, applause around the presentation of these awards. There was no doubt that those 40 people had won, but there was also the underlying awareness that 760 people had lost. We immediately began educational and organizational development work to align the systems and structures of the organization toward the win/win paradigm. We involved people at a grassroots level to develop the kinds of systems that would motivate them. We also encouraged them to cooperate and synergize with each other so that as many as possible could achieve the desired results of their individually tailored performance agreements. At the next rally 1 year later, there were over 1,000 sales associates present, and about 800 of them received awards. There were a few individual winners based on comparisons, but the program primarily focused on people achieving self-selected performance objectives and on groups achieving team objectives. There was no need to bring in the high school bands to artificially contrive the fanfare, the cheerleading, and the psych up. There was tremendous natural interest and excitement because people could share in each other's happiness, and teams of sales associates could experience rewards together, including a vacation trip for the entire office. The remarkable thing was that almost all of the 800 who received the awards that year had produced as much per person in terms of volume and profit as the previous year's 40. The spirit of win/win had significantly increased the number of golden eggs and had fed the goose as well, releasing enormous human energy and talent. The resulting synergy was astounding to almost everyone involved. Competition has its place in the marketplace or against last year's performance, perhaps even against another office or individual where there is no particular interdependence, no need to cooperate. But cooperation in the workplace is as important to free enterprise as competition in the marketplace. The spirit of win/win cannot survive in an environment of competition and contests. For win/win to work, the systems have to support it. The training system, the planning system, the communication system, the budgeting system, the information system, the compensation system all have to be based on the principle of win/win. I did some consulting for another company that wanted training for their people in human relations. The underlying assumption was that the problem was the people. The president said, "Go into any store you want and see how they treat you. They're just order takers. They don't understand how to get close to the customers. They don't know the product, and they don't have the knowledge and the skill in the sales process necessary to create a marriage between the product and the need." So I went to the various stores. And he was right. But that still didn't answer the question in my mind: what caused the attitude? "Look, we're on top of the problem," the president said. "We have department heads out there setting a great example. We've told them their job is 2/3 selling and 1/3 management, and they're outselling everybody. We just want you to provide some training for the salespeople." Those words raised a red flag. "Let's get some more data," I said. He didn't like that. He knew what the problem was, and he wanted to get on with training. But I persisted, and within 2 days we uncovered the real problem. Because of the job definition and the compensation system, the managers were creaming. They'd stand behind the cash register and cream all the business during the slow times. Half the time in retail is slow and the other half is frantic. So the managers would give all the dirty jobs, inventory control, stock work, and cleaning to the salespeople. And they would stand behind the registers and cream. That's why the department heads were tops in sales. So we changed one system, the compensation system, and the problem was corrected overnight. We set up a system whereby the managers only made money when their salespeople made money. We overlapped the needs and goals of the managers with the needs and goals of the salespeople. And the need for human relations training suddenly disappeared. The key was developing a true win/win reward system. In another instance, I worked with a manager in a company that required formal performance evaluations. He was frustrated over the evaluation rating he had given a particular manager. "He deserved a 3, he said, "but I had to give him a 1, which meant superior, promotable." "What did you give him a 1 for?" I asked. "He gets the numbers," was his reply. "So why do you think he deserves a 3? "It's the way he gets them. He neglects people, he runs over them. He's a troublemaker. It sounds like he's totally focused on peon production. And that's what he's being rewarded for. But what would happen if you talked with him about the problem, if you helped him understand the importance of PC? He said he had done so, with no effect. "Then what if you set up a win/win contract with him where you both agreed that 2/3 of his compensation would come from P from the numbers and the other 1/3 would come from PC, how other people perceive him, what kind of leader, people builder, team builder he is? Now that would get his attention," he replied. "So often the problem is in the system, not in the people. If you put good people in bad systems, you get bad results. You have to water the flowers you want to grow. As people really learn to think win/win, they can set up the systems to create and reinforce it. They can transform unnecessarily competitive situations to cooperative ones and can powerfully impact their effectiveness by building both P and PC. In business, executives can align their systems to create teams of highly productive people working together to compete against external standards of performance. In education, teachers can set up grading systems based on an individual's performance in the context of agreed-upon criteria and can encourage students to cooperate in productive ways to help each other learn and achieve. In families, parents can shift the focus from competition with each other to cooperation. In activities such as bowling, for example, they can keep a family score and try to beat a previous one. They can set up home responsibilities with win/win agreements that eliminate constant nagging and enable parents to do the things only they can do. A friend once shared with me a cartoon he'd seen of two children talking to each other. "If mommy doesn't get us up soon," one was saying, "we're going to be late for school." These words brought forcibly to his attention the nature of the problems created when families are not organized on a responsible win/win basis. Win/win puts the responsibility on the individual for accomplishing specified results within clear guidelines and available resources. It makes a person accountable to perform and evaluate the results and provides consequences as a natural result of performance. And win/win systems create the environment which supports and reinforces the win/win performance agreements. Processes. There's no way to achieve win/win ends with win/lose or lose/win means. You can't say, "You're going to think win/win, whether you like it or not." So the question becomes how to arrive at a win/win solution. Roger Fisher and William Urey, two Harvard Law professors, have done some outstanding work in what they call the principled approach versus the positional approach to bargaining in their tremendously useful and insightful book, Getting to Yes. Although the words win/win are not used, the spirit and underlying philosophy of the book are in harmony with the win/win approach. They suggest that the essence of principled negotiation is to separate the person from the problem, to focus on interests and not on positions, to invent options for mutual gain, and to insist on objective criteria, some external standard or principle that both parties can buy into. In my own work with various people and organizations seeking win/win solutions, I suggest that they become involved in the following four-step process. First, see the problem from the other point of view. Really seek to understand and to give expression to the needs and concerns of the other party as well as or better than they can themselves. Second, identify the key issues and concerns, not positions, involved. Third, determine what results would constitute a fully acceptable solution. And fourth, identify possible new options to achieve those results. Habits 5 and 6 deal directly with two of the elements of this process, and we will go into those in depth in the next two chapters. But at this juncture, let me point out the highly interrelated nature of the process of win/win with the essence of win/win itself. You can only achieve win/win solutions with win/win processes. The end and the means are the same. Win/win is not a personality technique. It's a total paradigm of human interaction. It comes from a character of integrity, maturity, and the abundance mentality. It grows out of high trust relationships. It is embodied in agreements that effectively clarify and manage expectations as well as accomplishment. It thrives in supportive systems. And it is achieved through the process we are now prepared to more fully examine in Habits 5 and 6. Application suggestions. 1. Think about an upcoming interaction wherein you will be attempting to reach an agreement or negotiate a solution. Commit to maintain a balance between courage and consideration. 2. Make a list of obstacles that keep you from applying the win/win paradigm more frequently. Determine what could be done within your circle of influence to eliminate some of those obstacles. 3. Select a specific relationship where you would like to develop a win/win agreement. Try to put yourself in the other person's place, and write down explicitly how you think that person sees the solution. Then list, from your own perspective, what results would constitute a win for you. Approach the other person and ask if he or she would be willing to communicate until you reach a point of agreement and mutually beneficial solution. 4. Identify three key relationships in your life. Give some indication of what you feel the balance is in each of the emotional bank accounts. Write down some specific ways you could make deposits in each account.